You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Enemy of My Enemy. I've got Brian and Jacob here today. We're going to be talking about what we do in the Ukraine. It's time for peace. Everybody wants peace. What that peace will look like is very different. And I guess I shouldn't say everybody wants peace. Everybody here wants peace. Everybody in this podcast wants peace. The American war machine does not want peace. Obviously, Russia is not interested in peace unless they get
hold
the
on,
bots.
Hold on. Russia wants Ukraine. A piece of yeah. Ukraine.
Oh, there you go. They want to jump. P-I-E-C-E. Very nice. Very good play on words there.
The American language wins again. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. So, all right. I'm gonna start off by providing both some stats as well as my feelings on this whole thing. Because it's complicated, as all foreign affairs are. One of the things that I dislike the most about foreign affairs is you're often made to feel that they are too complicated for you to have an opinion on. Now, for some people, that's obviously true. If you haven't done any studying, it's probably best to let the adults handle things. But it really isn't entirely ungraspable. That you can kind of understand where things are at and yes, it gets a little dicey, but it's nothing that you can't wrap your brain around. If you pass fifth grade and you've done a report before, I assume you'd be like, here's what's over here. And here's my point of view. And it's just that simple. One of the things is it's tough to get, I was like trying to look at numbers for this whole thing. And unfortunately, between Ukraine, Russia, and the United States, you have some governments that very much like to manipulate numbers for their side. You also have the UN that is interested in manipulating numbers as well. So is it possible to get any unbiased numbers? No, it is not. But there are certain estimations that we can make by averaging numbers out and by using some, statisticians that are not controlled by the government, and we can kind of put some things together here and there to figure out what's going on. We're looking in Ukraine now. This conflict actually dates all the way back to 2014. A lot of people don't know this. I actually only found out about this recently. Ukraine had Crimea and Donbas invaded two territories of Ukraine in 2014. And that's just the way it has been since that time. They've had Russian occupying forces there. So this is actually much older than you think. The difference here is that Ukraine is making, or that Russia is making a further push into Ukraine and attempting to make two territories. It does not yet have, it's invaded two, I guess, territories that are unoccupied. Russia has claimed both Crimea and Donbass to be part of Ukraine. To be part of Russia. But they have also claimed these two territories to be part of Russia in 2022 that they have yet to take yet. So they are making a greater push into Ukraine at large. Russia's bit in this is complicated because, as you may know, they are very good with propaganda. And this is one of those things. Russia today is their most notable outlet. It is state controlled. It is state funded. And they kind of get a huge say what goes in and out of there. Now, you may think you haven't heard of Russia today, and indeed, maybe you haven't heard of RT. You would be surprised at the number of liberty people and Republicans and even Democrats that are hired by RT to do journalism. It is wild. I had no idea how far-reaching this was. It opened up a little bit to me when they did the Rage Against the War Machine rally. And I was like, well, yeah, they work for Rush Today. So what? I work for a news outlets as well. And they're like, yeah, but this is literally state paid, state run. And I was like, wow, that's amazing to me that there's so many people that have this. So Russia Today is huge. Now, as far as how much they control it, I don't know. I mean, the U.S. has a bit of a journalist problem, too, as far as NPR. And we've obviously had some missteps there as well. Now, exactly how much NPR is regulated? Not too much. So how much leeway does Russia Today get? Meh, I'll let you guys worry that and figure that out. Ukraine is not innocent when it comes to propaganda. They have also done some distorting of the truth with the numbers to make it look like they are absolutely mowing down scores and scores and scores of Russians while barely suffering any casualties, when in reality their civilian casualties are probably sitting around the 40,000 marker, but they're wanting to push it down and down and down, say, oh no, they barely even touched us. We got barely even a scratch, of course, because that looks good to them, you know? And the Russians, of course, on the other side are like, we have killed millions of Ukrainians, just millions of them. When reality, you know, it's we're looking at losses that are somewhere around the $80,000 to $200,000 life count for both sides. So somewhere around 200,000. That actually has escalated. I was actually surprised how much that number has gone up in the past couple of months. We know there's a war there, but the death tolls are starting to get higher. And so this war actually is getting into more of a boiling point, in case you're wondering, like, is this going to like blow over? We actually, the deaths on, the death tolls in this are starting to actually accelerate as opposed to decelerate. Ukraine also has banned the Russian Orthodox faith while it investigates its links to Russia. And if you look up basically any American journalism done about the corruption in Ukraine prior to like 2 years ago, you're going to find some not favorable reviews about Zelensky's role and the Ukrainian government's role in civil rights. So let's not, provocation is one thing, but let's be clear here. We are talking about governments and they do bad things. The US, Russia, and Ukraine are unfortunately really suspect for this kind of thing. Now, something you may not know about Ukraine, I do have a few notes here because this is important. In 1994, Ukraine did give up some nuclear bombs to be part of the NPT, to treaty among nations, to just kind of, and it's not enforceable at all, but it, you know, say, hey, we'll protect each other if you dearm. Now, many of you think, oh, well, that really sucks for them because they had nuclear missiles, they could have protected themselves. They were actually coded by Russians and could not crack the codes, according to them. So they actually did not have functional nukes. But, you know, for the sake of, hey, what can we get out of this if we give you the nukes anyhow, instead of tinkering it and perhaps accidentally detonating one or something like that? Well, you'll get to be part of a club where we all protect each other. In case you want to know the history of us protecting clubs that give up their arms, it is not good, whether it's the UN or the NPT or whatever it may be. The US did interfere with a Ukrainian election. Now, this is a little less sinister. Now, we've had some times in like Central America, we've just straight up like thrown money, overthrown it, you know, was like, this is our guy. You guys suck. We're installing this Iran. Dictator. Yeah, yeah, we've had some issues in many countries.
Let's go back to the 50s here.
Yeah, this ain't new, baby. This ain't new. We've been doing this for a while. So, like, this is something. This happened. Did happen under Obama. Again, the media. Where were they on this? You probably didn't hear too much about it, but we.
It was here's a Nobel Peace Prize, Obama. Keep bombing Syria.
Yeah, keep killing. Keep exactly. Keep starting eight wars. Here's a new
Before
prize.
He even did a damn thing in office. Here's a Nobel Peace Prize because he's definitely going to stop all the bombing. Definitely.
For sure. And
this,
he absolutely.
This week, did. Anytime now.
You know, so the thing with Obama is, was it technically part of the democratic process? I believe it was. However, did we crazy interfere with that election? Oh yeah, like through money at it, through sponsors at it, through state money at it, through state sponsors at it, you know, to get somebody ousted who was indeed an elected person. And they were that when I say we did it democratically, we did it by what is technically legal for them. There was not a new election though. This was a let's get rid of your old guy through your constitutional loopholes that you have, and let's get somebody who's a lot friendlier with the United States. Again, that becomes very important because the U.S. has been jerking around in the Ukraine And this is not something that, this is something that's important for Americans to do a lot of introspection on, because I was looking at this with the history of NATO and Russia and how that started. Now, you, as the USSR was falling apart in 1990 and 91, and they were negotiating and they were setting up NATO, USSR actually was a part of this process, and as was Russia. This was actually part of the Russian dissolution process. And was like, hey, if you guys don't invade any other countries, USSR, because there's all these new countries now, you know, that you are no longer in control of, right? Chechnya, Georgia, Dagestan, Ukraine, Belarus, right? These kind of countries. And they're scared you're going to try to take them back. So if you don't invade anybody, then we won't expand east of Germany. In 1991... if, in case you're thinking I messed up on my years, no, that is the same year that this was ratified. Russia decided to help out in Georgia and help keep their independence. They just happened to leave a few extra troops there, wouldn't you know it? And America,
helpful Russians, always helping.
Just trying to help you out, right? They did the same thing in Chechnya. And this is, hey, you guys are an independent nation. We're just here to help. We're just here to help. We're just here. Oh, we own you now. Right. So, and this was very early. So they broke their peace treaties. I actually tried to count all the number of broken treaties that Russia has the number of treaties that they have broken. And it is dozens and perhaps hundreds. Russia will say whatever they want and do whatever they want later. They do not care. Negotiating with them is they'll tell you they won't do something and they will go right back to doing it. They've negotiated peace in things and even leaving things like Crimea and Belarus before and just never left. They do not care. Another thing that they are famous for, and the US loves to do this too, is talk about how just darn popular we are when we put a gun to somebody else's head. We have literal polls, literally at gunpoint, in case you think I am being like exaggerating. There are guns aimed at people and they vote. And they say, yes, we want Russia here. Now, some will point to a poll done outside of this non-coerced poll, right? With this gun-to-head poll. And it was, I think, 53% of the people in Crimea prior to 2014 when the invasion happened. 47% said they wanted to join Russia, which is almost half. That's significant. By far, the number one factor there, like 90% plus, says, because if we don't, Russia's going to invade and we're going to die. So this is not because we love Russia so much. This is because they're going to invade and kill us unless we become a part of them voluntarily. So I guess that's about all the notes I have here as far as the history goes. I'm going to give you my thoughts on this. Oh, I guess I have a lot of stuff on Mr. Putin. Vladimir is not a good dude. You may remember, for me, the most chilling thing for him was when we were like, hey, but you murdered all like the people who ran against you. And he's like, big deal. You guys murdered Martin Luther King Jr. And he said that while he was here visiting Donald Trump. He does not care that he murders people. He does not pretend he doesn't murder people. He sometimes does it get staged as a suicide. Yes, but he will straight up wink at the camera and be like, right.
Listen, he's Hillary Clinton, but with bigger balls. Okay. Like he owns it.
Right. If Hillary Clinton were not being as defiant as not trying to be innocent. We'll say that. If she were not trying to be innocent, she would be Vladimir Putin.
Could you imagine the universe if it was Putin versus Hillary and this had taken place during 2016 to 2020? Imagine the shit storm this would be.
We wouldn't have an overpopulation problem.
No.
We might still have somewhere. We wouldn't have global warming probably either.
Yeah, this is right.
We'd have very intense warming for about a week.
We have a huge amount of emissions for like 5 seconds, and then it's a lot of cooling there. Putin, he's repealed the right to assembly. He has actually killed inspectors and investigators that look into human rights. He kills journalists. They have, and this is almost hard to believe if you know what happens in places like Thailand and stuff, but they have like the worst record on children as far as the planet goes. If you pick up a Russian bride and they are young, there is a reason that is a thing. they want out. Their orphanages that they just starve them to death and say, oh yeah, we'll take care of your kid, and then you never see your kid again. So this is a very bad dude. Again, Zelensky, I mean, when you get to the point where you're banning faiths and also banning certain journalist outlets, bad. Hey, United States, would you have any familiarity with banning speech and right to assemble during, you know, just those tough times of crisis? Of course. So we have three bad actors. So here's just my, I'm going to boil this down to just real quick here, because my thoughts are pretty simple on this. The Russian people and the Ukraine people are not your enemies. The people there are generally very good. In fact, there's a reason that Putin has to keep such a strong arm on his internet, on his popularity there. Hey, if he thought he was going to crush an election, he wouldn't kill the guy he's running against, right? He would just crush him. That's easy. He's in a very sensitive, vulnerable position. He is not well-liked. Ask anybody who escapes, anybody who doesn't have a gun to their head that is supposed to vote for him. And he is, of course,
people don't love Kim Jong-il. I mean, come on, Hody.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Right. It's popular, right? He's a bad dude. Zelensky. This is a guy. He wasn't the guy we installed, but you know, after the US got involved, he is obviously a friendly person with the United States, because that's what otherwise will throw you out if you're not, right? Like, this is what the United States does. Is his priority to the people of Ukraine? Hasn't always been. Has it always been? It's not to civil rights, that's for sure. And as he wasted a ton of money that has gotten sent his way, unfortunately, yes, this is actually one of the things that caused like the New York Times even to be like, wait, what's going on here? Should we be involved in this war? Because all of a sudden, the money seems to not be going where we think it's going. I don't control any of these actors. Unfortunately, I know. Unfortunately, I don't even control the United States government, right? I wish I could tell you more about it. I wish I had more say in any of this stuff. So as far as like, if I think of myself as a citizen of the world, the Ukrainian people need to be permitted and encouraged to defend themselves against invading forces. Obviously, when you are racking up, I mean, I think Putin's army's killed like 40,000 different people in a year. I'm sorry, innocent people, not soldiers, innocent people, in about a year. And that's, it's really tragic, you know? So the thing is it's like, but if the US gets involved, we never get involved for the right reasons. Ask any other country we've helped out before. If we did it the right way, if we helped out and we're just like, no, guys, it's okay. I mean, you think about stuff like Kuwait, right? Like, are we here for you? El Salvador, are we here for you? Argentina, are we here for you? No, of course not. Anytime we get involved, we're involved in for our own interests. Russia's doing the same. Ukraine would no doubt do the same. With everybody with so much blood on their hands, nationally. Because again, American people, not your enemy. Russian people, not your enemy. Ukrainian people, not your enemy. With all this leadership and all these nations with blood on their hands, the best we can do is hands off, not get involved, not spend any national money or any troops that Zelensky is now asking for over there. We must not get involved. It has backfired before. We could have great reasons. You right now, sitting at your computer, have great reasons to fight against Putin, just like you had great reasons to fight against the Taliban. But it doesn't work out. We already know, right? So don't let this become another one of those wars. It's okay to acknowledge that there are bad things happening. It's okay even for you to get involved, but get involved privately. Make sure your government stays out of it, because otherwise it's just the beginning. You want to talk about innocent casualties? Afghanistan, Pakistan, anything the US does in the Middle East, right? Do you want that in Ukraine as well? Do you want that in Russia as well? These are not your enemies. These people should have your sympathy and they should have our support. We should give them a lot of guns. We should just not do it at a national level. We should do it on a private level to help them. Everybody has a right to their self-defense. I took like friggin' 20 minutes here. So you guys feel free to take a huge chunk there. Jacob, we'll start with you because as we know, you may have to take off on us. So go ahead and give us your thoughts. You guys should each take 10 minutes if you want it.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, honestly, we're a lot closer on this than I even thought coming in. I didn't think we were that far apart, but there's not much there I would dispute. There's some things I would nitpick, but I don't want to really focus on the nitpicks because, A, I mean, just economy of time, and B, it's just not that important to nitpick over some of the data. Because as you even admitted, some of it's like, it's a little bit, it's at least contestable or debatable. I really want to focus in on some of the key themes going on here. And I agree with the way you put it, that we have three bad actors here. I think that's 100% the right way to look at this. And when I had Scott Horton on my show, which that episode hasn't come out yet, but we kind of made an analogy or comparison to Star Wars, actually, which, like, if anyone knows Scott, like, duh, like, he loves to make Star Wars comparisons. It's not a direct political analogy, but it's sort of a good thematic analogy, which is in the prequel trilogy that you have the Separatists and the Trade Federation and all that, and they're kind of depicted as like the bad guys that the Jedi have to go fight against. But then by the end, we realize, oh, well, the real bad guys were really the Galactic Empire. Oh, yeah, thanks for highlighting that. Absolutely. You know, contact your representative about the Syria war resolution. 100%. I forgot to tell you to highlight that if you hadn't already.
It's all right. I'm going to go through all the comments.
Yeah. So, where was I? Oh, yeah. So, but the real enemy in the Star Wars prequel trilogy was the Galactic Empire, which had fallen under the control of a Sith Lord and Chancellor Palpatine. And he, you know, gradually expanded the imperialist and military powers of the Republic and centralized power, and use the Jedi and use the clone army to combat the evil that they thought, you know, that was the big evil. But then by the end, they're the ones who have taken control, and they're the bigger evil. And when you look at some of the reasons why the Separatists were fighting, it was a mixture of things that were bad, and they were definitely doing bad things. But some of it was based in things like, I'm getting really nerdy in here. So if you don't like Star Wars, this analogy won't work for you. But you know, Count Dooku knew about the corruption in the Republic, and that's why he wanted to decentralize, why he wanted to break away. Wasn't doing it in the right way. The point of this analogy is to say that, yes, I agree with everything you said, Hody, that Putin, not a great dude. Russia, yeah, I mean, there's a history of broken promises, a history of deceit. It's not a good place to live. It's not a place that's friendly to liberty. The only point that I really want to drive home with people is that getting America involved is not bringing good guys to the rescue of the innocent Ukrainian people and the innocent Russian people who are getting caught up in this conflict. It's bringing a bigger bad guy into the mix and hoping that he does some good. And I'm really against this on multiple fronts. I'm against this for the historic reasons that not really. Again, the political landscape of the Star Wars universe does not directly map on here. It's more of a thematic analogy. It doesn't work on a direct political level. But my point here is just, now what does work very politically is the Galactic Republic turning into the Galactic Empire. I mean, that is definitely 100% America, like 1,000,000,000%. That is what we are. And we still think we're the good guys on the global stage. And we're not even the good guys at home. I mean, we might, I guess, you know, to give the devil his due, are we as bad as Russia right now at home? No. But I mean, that's kind of like going really far down, you know, like scraping the bottom of the barrel to make a point, being like, well, we're not that bad. It's like, yeah, but we're not that good. We do have the world's biggest prison population. We do have a giant militaristic police state that, you know, definitely causes a lot of damage here at home, and things are only getting worse. So, yeah, I'm glad there's Star Wars fans in the audience. So that's good. I need to really drive home that point. And I think where we disagree is not so much on the laying out of the big picture. I think we, again, we'll dispute over the small details, but over the, I think the big picture, you and I are in pretty good agreement. I don't know how much Brian agrees. I'll let him chime in with that. I'm hoping he pretty much is on board with that description you gave at the beginning, Hody. You know, and some things that I would add to it, you know, America is equally broken a lot of treaties that have existed. So as NATO, and, you know, some of the facts that I would also like to bring here is like the construction of all of these missile launchers that have been built, or, you know, close to Russian territory that can be armed with missiles that can carry a nuclear payload. This is not something, again, is this me saying, oh, the Russian invasion is justified? Absolutely not. But if you could imagine some foreign country building missile launchers near America that could be armed with a nuclear payload, and you think America would just sit there and be peaceful in trying to solve that problem? Well, absolutely not. This is not to justify Russia, but rather to point out the realities of the world that we live in, which is not a like libertarian world. We live in a very, you know, world that's dominated by these nation states. And I mean, some of them are better than others if you make that comparison, but in the grand scheme of things, they're all pretty bad. And so is Russia justified in the invasion? No, but there was absolutely more than I can do in the time I have here, just an endless list of things that NATO and America, and using Ukraine as a bit of a proxy and a spot to focus a lot of this in, have done to raise conflicts. You know, America has not been a good actor here that has been doing everything right every step along the way, and just trying really hard to avoid a war with Russia and trying really hard to promote peace in the region. And there were opportunities over, you know, the last several decades where America could have been that city on the hill, could have been that shining beacon of liberty, and could have been doing their absolute best to bring peace to the region. And maybe it would have failed. We don't know. I mean, there was even people, I mean, again, I don't have all the facts in front of me right now, but like there were talks back after the collapse of the Soviet Union about, like, you know, maybe we should bring Russia into NATO. Maybe we should, if we're going to expand NATO, let's start with adding Russia to it as a sign of good faith, and then bring all the countries between, you know, Western Europe and Russia into the fold as well. You know, and maybe that wouldn't have worked, but the point is none of this was attempted. And where I'm getting at is that because America has a track record of not pursuing peace, not only here in Russia, but in the world broadly, as you brought up, I mean, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, I mean, there's countless, endless, you know, examples, endless, in South America. So because of this, we cannot trust America to suddenly be doing the right thing now. They clearly want this conflict with Russia for a multitude of reasons. And I think as libertarians, the most important thing that we can do is to speak out against war and to speak out against interventionism. And it, like, for us living in America, our number one priority needs to be keeping America out of this war and stopping all of the financial aid and military aid to Ukraine. Now, and I agree with Hody, if you want to privately support them, you want to donate to charities who are providing food and ammunitions and things like that, absolutely do that. I mean, that's your free choice. The point, again, is that how are we going to end this conflict? Like, we all want peace here.
We,
right?
Tell Russia to leave. That's it. Ends the conflict tomorrow.
Seriously. Oh, yeah. Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. If someone breaks into your house, and
you just tell them to leave and they'll leave. That is a great strategy. Go on Twitter right now, Brian. Yeah. Tell Putin to leave and he'll be gone tomorrow.
Right. Here's the thing. I've heard arguments from a lot of people saying that, well, we need to stay out of this war. We just need to go ahead and let Ukraine fight it and lose, because you know the math. We've all done the math on this. Ukraine loses, Russia gets Ukraine, and that's not our problem. It's not our problem. Then, you know, Moldova. Not our problem. You know, they've got ethnic Russians there. Georgia, not our problem. And you're right. A lot of those are, quote, not our problem. But they are our allies' problems. Which I know a lot of people are against foreign entanglements, NATO, things like that. I know that you, Jacob, all people have said about your thoughts on NATO and how it needs to be eliminated.
Just to be clear, NATO could just be an agreement without having a giant standing military. So, like, I'd even be fine with that.
Okay, because, so like the EU?
It's similar to that. I mean, that's okay. Not my preferred solution, but my point is just that, you know, I'm not going to make the perfect the enemy of the good if, you know, like so the there's...
I had to get that in, I'm sorry.
Brian, let's let you go for a bit here, because I know there's a lot of debate to be had. We will do that.
Yeah, do we need to do a break?
Oh, you know what? Yeah, well, you haven't really delivered your thoughts yet. I guess I'll take a break before Brian delivers his thoughts, and then we'll do a debate. So everybody here, hang tight real quick, and we'll be back in just a minute.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Thanks so much for hanging on, everybody. We're back. Brian, go ahead and give us your thoughts about the whole Ukraine conflict and what goes down here. We'll cheap shot you back.
I just had to get that in because, you know, there's some points here on this. And don't get me wrong. The U.S. has screwed up a lot of things. And Russia has screwed up a lot more things. And China has screwed up a lot more things. And everybody has screwed up a lot of things. If you look at any large association of people, and I'm going to quote George Carlin here, one person is beautiful. You see the beauty in their eyes and the wonder of the universe in them. And you start putting more people together and that disappears. It gets stupider. And we have places then it becomes criminal, like Russia. So I'm going to peel this onion back a little bit and maybe we can work through this couple of things. We're going to disagree on a few items. We're going to agree on a few. So start off, big picture, Russia being a part of NATO. Was that offered? Yes. Was it realistic? Probably not, because Russia was going through its own internal collapse when these things were happening. I was there. I watched the wall come down. I've been to Berlin, held the wall, blah, blah, blah. To compare now to then, during the Cold War, when there was the fact of imminent nuclear apocalypse by somebody, you know, sneezing on the tapes and accidentally loading up the war practice tapes. You know, it's a little bit different.
There's no threat of nuclear apocalypse now.
Well, there's a far lower risk of it. If you think that now is a
I'm not saying
risk
it's
a, any
know,
time,
higher, oh, no, no, but to, I, but to be dismissive of it is just completely naive and reckless.
Really? Hang on here. Let's go over this here. Okay.
Let's let Brian go. We'll deconstruct him in a moment here.
Let me ask you, how many nuclear missiles were there at the time, peak nuclear missile production between the U.S. and Russia? How many? Ballpark.
Well, I don't have the figures in front of me. I'll give you that doesn't numbers. Really matter because we still have enough between America and Russia to blow the entire world to kingdom come.
Hey, that's okay. I just won't say anything. That's okay. I can stop. Russia had about 17,000, U.S. had about 15,000. Now think about that, 17,000, 15,000. And these weren't little tiny like bombs. They were big ones. They were the big ones because the targeting system sucked. And you threw a big bomb because you wanted to hit something. And you know what? It doesn't matter. Now the bombs are a lot smaller. They're a lot more miniaturized and they're a lot more accurate. And also the numbers are far lower. The full numbers are in the single digit thousands, if not less. And more, actually, that's more along the lines of using air burst over ground burst, but we'll talk about that later, scientific libertarian. So let's go back here. So NATO, Russia, you know, the whole thing of us having nukes on their border. We've had nukes on the Russian border. They've had nukes on our border all throughout Europe and things like that for the past, 60 years, 50 years.
Hold on.
I mean, man, yes, we have. Turkey?
Do you not think the location of those bases and those missile launchers matters, like in terms of strategically where you're placing them?
Sure, it does matter. But okay. The thing, and Russia had a right to go ahead and go into Cuba and do that. Now, was Kennedy right to go ahead and blockade Cuba? Probably not. Did he go ahead and do a back-end deal to say he's going to go ahead and take the Juno missiles out of Turkey and go ahead and allow Russia to go ahead and kind of walk away quietly, get what they want? Kennedy got what he wanted, and then Kennedy got something else that he didn't want. But that's a different story together.
Oh, Ryan.
So this gets back to now NATO expansion. NATO expansion, does NATO have a right to exist, and does NATO have the right to take in new members? All of the countries that were former Warsaw Bloc members suddenly wanted to join NATO. Now, was that because they invaded? Was that because the U.S. threw a bunch of money at them? What was it? No, it was more along the free will. I remember when Poland, which, by the way, if you recall and read history, Poland was always a big thorn in Russia's side, especially with the solidarity movement like Valenza, everything else that was going on during the 80s. Now, I'm going to keep going here and try to go so much more to go through on this. So we know Ukraine, corrupt as hell. Russia, I think that's a different level. That's kind of like comparing me and Jacob and our love of Jesus, okay? We know that Ukraine is a criminal, has criminal organization, but Russia's been the top for a long time. Okay. And with looking at all of that, if you can seriously sit there and say Ukraine is just as bad as Russia or just a little bit worse.
Did I say that?
Oh, we're going to go technical. Awesome. Okay. No, seriously. I mean, Jacob, the thing is this, the biggest thing that has to stop right now that ends the killing, that promotes peace and everything else, is Russia withdraws and we apply the pressure that we can. Do I want U.S. troops in Ukraine? Hell no. Does the EU want to put their troops in Ukraine? Hell no. But what's Russia doing? Russia's continuing to go ahead and invade and throw bodies at the problem, because that's what Russia does in every single war that they've ever participated in. Look at World War II. Look at World War I. Go through the history of all the Russian wars. They start off shitty. They go ahead and throw bodies at the problem, and that eventually they win, which is what's going to happen here in Ukraine, unfortunately. Now, when that happens, because it's going to happen, there's U.S. troops are not going to be going in, okay? But when that happens, what do we do at that point? Do we sit there and wait for Moldova to fall? Do we sit there and wait for any other countries in the EU to fall? Do we go ahead and let Georgia get completely taken over? What is the demarcation point? Is there a demarcation point in your world? Because if there isn't a demarcation point, why are we doing business with these countries? Seriously. And at what point then do the other countries say, just like what happened in Crimea, where they all said, you know what? Sure, 47% of us want to be part of Russia because 90% of us don't want to die. At what point do we stop standing up for freedom on these countries? Now, do I think we should go with nukes and troops and everything else? No. But there has to be, just as Josh is saying there has to be a ceasefire one way or another. There has to be a ceasefire and a withdrawal. And without doing that, and if Putin's going to go ahead and say, I'm going to keep throwing bodies at this meat grinder, to sit there and say, well, Russia and Ukraine are just both terrible kind of countries, you kind of think Russia's probably the more terrible one. And at this point, they're being the real asshole of the whole thing. So at this point, I don't have a problem really too much with sending weapons over there. The billions, the accounting, everything else, yes, that needs to be well documented. And of course, our news media has got their thumb up their butts, worried if we should put masks back on for COVID. But they should be looking at that, and they should be going and taking a look at what's going on. And if you look at the history of Russia, you look at the history of what they've done in the past, they do this behavior over and over and over. And somebody eventually has to stand up to it. And it sucks. And I don't want the U.S. to be the world's policeman.
Okay.
I want the EU to do it. Now, Han, you talked for 10 minutes. I've only talked for 7. Give me a break.
I didn't get a full 10 minutes. You cut me off right at the 8-minute mark. It was 20 minutes when I started. You cut me off right at 28.
Anyhow, the other thing. All right.
Yeah. So you asked who's going to stop Russia if they just keep going. All right. Let me turn the question on you. Who's going to stop America, Brian? We keep on fucking up the Middle East. We keep on fucking up South America. We keep on fucking up here in our own country. We're an oppressive regime to our own country. Are we as bad as Russia? So does that matter if we're not like, oh, the people suffering in America under American rule, they don't really matter because they don't have it as bad as Russia. So who's going to stop us?
How did we stop Vietnam? Massive protests. Massive protests right here. Not the one that was had the guys waving the Russian flags behind the Libertarian Party head. Not that kind of a protest. Massive protests where we say, look, we're tired of participating in bullshit wars for no purpose whatsoever. I mean, seriously, think about this. North Vietnam, South Vietnam, North Korea, South Korea, things like that. All these other wars that we've participated in back then where we threw way more bodies at. Way more bodies and more body bags came home than anything that we've done in the past 20, 30 years. I'm not justifying them, but what I'm saying is massive protests at home stopped the Vietnam War.
How long did it take for those protests to stop the war, Brian?
7-8 years.
Yeah. How many people died?
Yeah. 60,000. How many people died in Afghanistan and Iraq combined?
Yeah. That's my point.
Yeah. I understand.
My point is,
We left Afghanistan shittily, I might add. Okay. Really terribly, might I add. Not setting up the country to succeed, might I add. But we left those countries in a terrible state. Yes. And I don't like going in and stuff like that. But Russia's the aggressor here. Russia's gone in and invaded this country, killed 200,000 people. 200,000 people have died in this war so far. And that's a ballpark estimate by what's going on.
Your solution is to keep them giving them weapons. And we have to put a line in the sand. We have to stop Russia. So at the end of the day, I'm advocating that we need to stop war and pursue alternative paths to peace. And you're saying, we have to continue the war.
Let me moderate a bit here. Yeah. Jacob, what is your path to peace look like right now? Because I don't think, we're bringing in a lot of our baggage of discussions we've had in the past, but this is our audience. They might know. So, Jacob, what is your solution for peace in Ukraine?
Listen, I don't have a master solution. What I do know is that the incentives matter. And right now, no one has any incentives. The people who are dying, of course, want the war to stop, but the governments involved, they don't have any major incentives for this war to stop because, no one's in a position where they have everything to gain and really nothing to lose. So, I mean, other than nuclear war, but, our leaders are idiots, so they don't care about that. The solution is, A, we have to live in reality. And we have to stop playing this stupid American revisionist history game where we're the good guys. We got to go in there and stop the bad guys. How many world wars does it take until we realize that we always end up worse on the back end? Like the World War I, terrible. World War II, terrible. I'm sure World War III will go great this time. Like, no, it's not going to. So if you're expecting a perfect solution where the war stops, Russia goes back to their side and everyone lives happily ever after and it's just picture perfect, you are not living in reality, okay? There are two ways that this war can end. One is with millions dead, because this war goes on for like another 4 years or 5 years or 10 years. Or we can stop the fucking war machine. We can stop the death machine now. And listen, I don't know exactly what's on the other side because I don't have a freaking crystal ball. But I do know that what we have to do is, we have to stop the killing and then we need to hold our government accountable to stop mucking things up, stop going in there and provoking things, stop. I mean, it is so freaking obvious, Brian, that America wants this war with China, that they want to go to war with Russia, that that is what the regime wants. They're gearing up for it. That's what the neocons have been talking about. And we either as libertarians are the voice against that, or we don't stand for anything of principle.
So let me just real quick here, Jacob, what are what would you be okay to give up to get a ceasefire? And how would you how would you suppose that ceasefire might
be maintained? Listen, if the choices, let's get down to brass tacks. If the choice comes down to Russia will not end the war unless they get to keep some part of the Donbass, I am not going to elevate that piece of land over, well, let's just fight a war for the next 5 to 10 years where Russia gets it anyway, and we have millions dead, and we're risking nuclear Armageddon. Like, sorry, that is
we understand the consequences here. But I'm just saying, what I'm trying to nail down here is Russia will not take just the Donbass and just Crimea. They also went to major chunks that they haven't taken yet in Ukraine to stop doing this. So what I'm asking you is, do you give them that? Do you not? How would you go about it?
What I've said before is that all sides need to come to the negotiating table, and there will have to be concessions on all sides. So America, probably going to have to, you know, tear down some of those missile bases. Probably going to have to start honoring some of those treaties again. Probably going to have to stop funneling so much, you know, money and foreign aid and weapons into Ukraine and promise to have less of a presence there. Russia, it's not going to, you know, like I would say Russia, you don't get to keep everything, but it's, you know, you got to give something to Russia or they don't have any incentive to stop the fucking throwing all the bodies they have at the dog pile. So yeah, you'll probably have to throw them a little bit of a bone in terms of saying you'll get to keep these parts of the Donbass and these parts of Crimea and Ukraine.
Well, they've already taken those. They want more. Yeah, they want what they haven't created yet.
I have to check. Is the Sudetenland still on the list? Does Russia still want the Sudetenland? Do we know that?
Because I think here's the thing, Jacob. I am more on your side than Brian. Because actually, I'm going to get to you, Brian, in just a second. Because I do have a lot of pushback with that. Because I do think that the United States needs to get out and get not involved. My thing with you, Jacob, and I think where we've had disagreements on this in the past is, what do you give to Russia that they say they'll stop, that you know they're going to break that treaty in maybe months? I mean, you know, probably, right? For knowing their history, right? So what do you give them because they have nukes, because they're, and they are scary. All that stuff you're saying, totally true. They have nukes. Nuclear Armageddon is scary. They are scary people. There's not a lot Putin won't do, right? Like, I am not at all trying to downplay their terrifyingness. What I'm saying is, what do you do? What do you sacrifice for the people in Ukraine because of the Russian aggression to make the Russian aggression stop? And then how do you keep it stopped? Because otherwise, what's the point of negotiating at all, knowing they'll just keep doing this? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, listen, I mean, it's not like there's a easy solution. My only point is that war is not a solution either. And that if we're looking at the two options in front of us, of either escalating this into a global conflict and a war that might last 5 to 10 years with all the, you know, potential ways that could go wrong, and Russia probably ends up with a lot of that land anyway, and now it's war-torn and we have millions dead, versus we have to, listen, it's just like when someone says, well, how are you going to end slavery? How are you going? How as libertarians, how are we going to set the world free? No one has the perfect answers to these questions. But as a libertarian who is fundamentally anti-war, what I say is, first, we take violence on a massive scale like that, that's going to kill millions of people, and we've tried that dozens of times before, and it doesn't work. We take that off the table. And then, yeah, we start that hard road of trying to find the peaceful solutions. And there, I mean, you know, off the top of my head, it's not like if I actually had the answer to this, I wouldn't be on a podcast. I would be, you know, going out there and doing it. No one has the like silver bullet that's going to like, oh, the war is going to stop and Russia is suddenly not going to be terrible ever again. Like, no, that would be naive thinking. My point is, to be anti-war is to be anti-war, which means like we stop the war. We don't fight a 5 to 10 year war that isn't going to lead to anything good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Brian, go ahead. You had a go ahead.
A few little things. If we go ahead and stop the aid and Ukraine falls, does that really stop the death machine? Does that stop?
No. What I'm saying is there has to be a negotiated peace.
Yes or no? Does the death stop? Yes or no? Because we have proof here on what they've done in occupied territories, where they've gone in and mass murdered citizens who weren't out waving Russian flags or just because they were walking down the street. There's plenty of videos out there on that. So I think you can agree that the death doesn't stop if Ukraine falls. I mean, that's what's happened.
Right. But that's not what I said was not that Ukraine. What I'm saying is that we need to basically tell Ukraine, that we're not going to be giving you all this support anymore, and that we need to approach Putin, and we need to sit down, and we need to start talking ceasefire, ending the conflict, and working up, you know, some kind of agreement to try to pursue a long-term peace in this region. Now, do I trust America to do that? Do I trust Russia to do that? No. But the point is, the alternative is war, and that is not better.
Okay.
And
so
if you're proposing the magical third option where we escalate and everything goes great, you're living in fucking fantasy land.
I'm sorry, you are. Because here's the thing. Hang on. So it's a tie game. It's 68-68 or 69-69, because you know what? I got to do it anyway. So it's 69-69. We've got 30 seconds left. It's a basketball game. You've got all your players in. And you know what the coach says? The coach comes up and says, hey, you know what? We're not going to play our starters anymore. I want you to go get me the JV team, okay? And go put them out there against one of the toughest teams in the world. And what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and stop the game, and we're going to tell the other team to go ahead and, hey, it's time to negotiate that we go ahead and end this in a tie, or that you maybe, you know, you win 70. No, because that's not what's going to happen. When you say we're stopping military aid, we're stopping everything, which means all the logistics, which means all of the super secret spy shit that we're doing for Ukraine, all of that ends. How quickly does Russia stop and go, oh, okay, they're stopping? Or
well, no,
they
maybe maybe we're getting hung up here on a, you know, we might be talking past each other here. No. I'm not saying you pull the weapons out and then say, and the support out, and then go pursue peace. What you say is, all right, Russia, you know, you tell Ukraine, we need to find the end game here. We can't continue to give you this stuff. Yeah. We need to go and talk about negotiated ceasefire. And if Zelensky says no, say, okay, but if you're not going to cooperate, then that's when we're going to put an end date to our support.
And haven't they tried negotiations? I mean, at the beginning of the war, they were doing negotiations.
Yeah,
and Zelensky wanted
to sign some of them, and America told them not to because they wanted to go to war with Russia.
Okay, so if we want to go to war with Russia, why don't we have the troops on the ground right now? I mean, it's a year.
Well, because what we want to do is fight proxy wars, because that's more fun for us.
Proxy wars are more fun. But wait a minute, you're saying the U.S. is wanting this war with Russia. We're wanting the war with China. So we want to start a two-front war, which in all of history has always gone very well for anyone who starts it. Just ask Hitler. Just ask Napoleon. So I don't understand how, Jacob, that you think that America really wants to start a war in China and Russia, even as a proxy war. I don't understand how that's something that's in America's interest, seeing as how Americans would stand up to that.
Our leaders are idiots.
That's enough.
What? Now, hold on. That one I feel I can't answer. There's more than just idiocy to this. America likes proxy wars because we spend money. And that provoked that.
Yeah, it's the military industrial complex.
Right.
It's the increasing of American hegemony and American dominance on the world stage, because we don't want anyone to deal with anybody but us.
Okay, but hang on. Let me ask you the question here on this. How many Americans die in those wars? How many? I mean, there were protests. I remember the protest with Cindy Sheehan and everything else over the Iraq War. I remember some of the protests on the Afghanistan War, things like that. How many dead body Americans would we have? And what do you think that would do politically to either party that's endorsed that? What do you think would happen?
I mean, it could be bad, but we're talking about political
could be bad
versus what's good for. Oh, no, I'm sorry. If we put boots on the ground, it will be bad.
No, I'm talking politically for those people. I mean, I want you to think about this for a second. So we've supported, I'm going to broaden the scope here. We've supported Taiwan for 60, 70 years, which, again, the people saying that Taiwan's part of China is, frankly, when the LP posted that, I was like, why did the LP?
Embarrassing.
Yeah, that was beyond embarrassing.
Right.
But the thing is this, Ukraine's its own country. Russia invaded. They're the aggressors. In World War II, Germany was the aggressor. They invaded other countries. World War I, Germany, Austria, all the others were the aggressors. They invaded other countries. Okay.
I think that's, Brian, here you've established
the neocon pattern. Talking points really well, Brian.
Well, no, but here's the thing. Brian is correct that there's a problem right? Like letting.
But he's ignoring the provocation, Toddy.
Here's Jacob.
Are you going to invade me now?
Oh my gosh! Seriously. All right, now here's the thing. Like every country is provoked to every country, right?
Yeah.
Like it's the way everything's set up right now.
So much
like,
triggered.
There's so many reasons that you could say, you know, reasons you give to invade a country. I think the issue is both of you are citing legitimate histories, right? Mm-hmm. We know if we pull back now, regardless of what we negotiate with Russia, they will continue to invade Ukraine. That is simply a fact. The other fact is if America continues to get involved, we will simply keep going and going and throwing money and dead bodies will continue to pile up. Both of these facts are true. So therefore, neither one may be an acceptable solution to most people. Right. Because what we're doing here is, I mean, one of the big, huge reasons the lefty red fash crowd wants to get NATO out and pull back or whatever is they like this aggression. This is fantastic. Let's have Putin keep going. Right. Like we know that if we pull back, he'll continue to invade and he'll continue to take over independent countries. We like this. This is fantastic. We're Soviets. This is amazing. Right. We love that this is happening. Like these are the War Z people, right? We know that. At the same time, I think we know with just as much evidence that if America continues to be involved, it will continue to not be for the right reasons. It will continue to be expensive. Civilians will continue to die. Like I believe there's an ethical way for us to do this, but I don't believe that solution will come from the United States. I don't believe it'll come from the Ukraine, and I don't believe it'll come from Russia.
It'll probably come from the EU.
It's
their back door, and they should be leading this. That's my opinion.
And maybe that's something. I've never said in this podcast or on Twitter or anywhere else,
right,
anything about the EU getting involved, because that's not my business. I don't live in the EU. If EU wants to get involved, they're their neighbors. Like I wouldn't have as much of a problem if Canada was being invaded. I would have less issue coming to their defense than I would with what we're doing in Ukraine. But again, we can't truncate the antecedents. We can't ignore that. And we didn't have time to go into it in this podcast, but it's not, listen, the provocation of Russia was not just us sticking the middle finger up at them. There was way more provocation than that.
Need to trigger a country to provoke an invasion? I mean,
it doesn't make it okay for Russia to invade, but this is what this is doing is basically your Kathy Newman with Jordan Peterson going. So what you're saying is no, I have never said Russia was okay to invade. What I'm saying is we can be against the invasion and the provocations.
Oh yeah. But the question is this, is the provocation that, hey, I want to be friends with them. I don't want to be friends with you anymore.
So what this is doing, this is a composition fallacy where it is. It's 100. You do this. Josh Equal does this. It is a composition fallacy where you look at one individual thing that happened and go, well, this isn't enough to reasonably provoke war.
Add up
the 100 different things that have happened over the history that extends back even before 2014. Okay, just going back all the way to the collapse of the Soviet Union till now, there's been a history of things that Russia has done that have been bad, and a history of things that America and NATO have done.
Killing 30 million Ukrainians. Yeah, you're right. Russia's done some bad things.
I mean, we're at time here, and I understand.
Yeah,
my thing is, you have two different points of view, and this is I understand, and frankly, I think both of you are wrong, and so I'm just going to go ahead and take the last word here, right? Because here's the thing: I get what Brian's saying in the calculus of the way things are set up, and that it's like if you just let this go, we know what happens, right? And at the same time, I understand what Jacob's saying because I have absolute confidence that the United States will kill innocent people if we continue to be involved. So, what's the solution to this? Well, guys, here's the thing, and we've talked about this on this show before. Most of the solution, this is where I think we can all probably come together a little on, is you would much rather prevent these issues than try to fix them after they've happened. Because I truly think it's all a disaster right now. And there's no solution you're going to hear on any podcast that's not going to sound like a total disaster, because it's a disaster. It's already a disaster. And there's no real cleaning it up nicely. The issue here is one of the things that I think that we need to have a hard look at, and something that maybe we can think about in the future. is America very rarely invades its business partners. In fact, we've invaded people to force them to become business partners before, right?
Yep.
So does that mean we should start sanctioning more, right?
No.
Are we hurting people when we sanction? Or are we hurting the people we think we're hurting when we do that? Here's the thing. If we have more business connections, what if we did this with Cuba now that we've brought them up? If we said, please, you know, let's do good business with you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, I'm not saying you fix Fidel Castro. He's always going to be a bad guy. But when you put a bad guy in a position, I mean, Fidel Castro is a terrible guy. I don't want to, anytime you say like, oh, I guess he's bad, or I guess he's no saint. We're talking about, we've discussed on the show, a lot of people responsible for some of the worst atrocities humanity has ever known. We're talking in like the top 0.1% worst human beings on the entire planet. Okay. And I'm not saying you fix these guys, you know, like somebody once brought this up and they was like, listen, if you have free markets, it's not like Al Capone just becomes a nice math teacher. Right. He's still Al Capone, right? Like he's still a bad dude. Right. But is Al Capone have the influence that he's able to have without the prohibition? And is Fidel Castro as bad a dude as he is if the United States isn't overtly hostile? Right. Now, we can't control a lot of people. Right. But I think open trade helps. I think when we open these trades and we have these friendly agreements, that is something that could have been a preventative balm on this.
Yep.
Think about this because, and I want people thinking about this in the future because there's a million of these kinds of conflicts that are going to keep popping up. And just think back, what could we do? Because what you can do to prevent it is happening right now. Right now, what we do, we're having big protests for Ukraine, big protests for Russia, right? There's all these big protests going out there in the world, right? That people want to say like, down with NATO, or yes, NATO, or more NATO, or less NATO, or yes, Russia, no Russia, or yes, Ukraine, no Ukraine. But what we aren't talking about is all these countries that we're going to be dealing with militantly if we don't open up things economically with them.
Yep.
And I think that's something that I'm hoping at least we can at least kind of agree on here.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah. And I want to bring up one interesting point, Odie, you're exactly correct. And that's the best example of that is Vietnam. Vietnam right now, our trade with Vietnam is growing to the point where a country in the area who's worried about its sphere of influence is not happy that the Vietnamese are trading more with America. A country that's been invaded, by the way, by that country that wants that sphere of influence several times.
Right. So obviously this goes down to we need to open up. We are demonizing Russians in general. This is something
which we shouldn't.
Right? This, yeah. I mean, we've been doing this. This isn't even new. This is like Boris and Natasha on Bullwinkle, right? Rocky Bullwinkle. I mean, we've been doing this for a long time. Mm-hmm. The Russian people aren't your enemies.
Yep.
And we should be doing things. Look, I'm not saying, just open things up for Putin. No, we're opening things up for oil refiners. We're opening up things up for metal manufacturers. We're opening things up for people to do business, right?
There you go. Like, repeal all the gun laws in America and repeal all trade laws. Freely trade a bunch of AR-15s over to Eastern Europe. Definitely don't do anything illegal to get them over there right now. Yeah. Absolutely don't do that.
Well, so go ahead, Brad.
I was going to say, one thing that I do want to get into on this is that we've been, the Ukraine war has had significant impacts in a lot of different fields that touch everything from agriculture to science to everything else, because they were basically a single source producer for urea, for fertilizer, for argon, xenon, krypton, for any of the noble gases that are used.
A lot of wheat stuff too.
Yeah. I mean, wheat. Yeah. I mean, We've been very lucky. We've dodged pretty much a bullet on starvation in northern Africa. So and then water rights and things like that. So, I mean, the reality is, yes, the best thing that would happen would be that we go ahead and encourage trade. We encourage these countries to trade. The problem is there are countries out there who don't want that to happen. They want to maintain their sphere of influence over and over again. They want the trading coming back to Mother Russia or to Mother China. They don't want the trade going to the United States. In fact, you heard Xi today. He already said that the United States is the greatest problem because the Chinese economy isn't growing as fast, and it's all the United States' fault.
Yeah.
But it's also important to point out that America is not exactly just pro free trade across the board either.
No, but we're better than most of the major countries. I mean, there's tariffs in almost every country you go to now, which is terrible.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
I wrote a paper on it, and I can tell you, free trade is the lucrative free trade that took place between Israel, Saudi Arabia, using Jordan as the intermediary in the 80s and 90s, is what eventually opened up a lot of the things that happened in that country, because Israel was such a producer of medical supplies and high tech gear.
Oh yeah,
and they couldn't get them in these other countries because there was no regional trade partner, so you just created basically an LLC in Jordan, made in Jordan, and it got out. And guess what? That opens the world. Free trade opens the world, opens eyes, opens minds, and it ends the stupid crap like you have what's going on.
I 100% agree. I got to go. I'll close just a little bit with this, which is that, I think, Cody, you nailed it on the head. And I think that there is no perfect solution. But yeah, to summarize, I don't think that escalating things in the war is the right way through this. We don't know the limits of human innovation in the free market. And my general rule of thumb is that when we take violence off the table, and part of this is not just libertarianism, part of this is my Christianity, but I just believe that when we take violence off the table and we force ourselves to find peaceful solutions, even up against insurmountable odds, opening free trade and innovation in the free market, it's not a cop-out answer, because we've seen this happen before. We've seen how the free market helped to basically make slavery, like, you know, not much. I mean, I'm not saying slavery is gone in the world, but part of what has eliminated the institution of slavery to the point that it's been eliminated is technological innovation. Because we actually hit a point where it was like, actually, it's more money to keep a slave alive and to take care of them than it is to buy the machine that does the work easier. And then, you know, I'm oversimplifying a lot of history in 30 seconds here. My point just being that, I'm always going to be on the side of removing violence from our options. I'm not saying what I mean by that is escalating violence. I'm people defending themselves is not what I have a problem with. What I have a problem with, again, is I'm not trying to oversimplify this. I'm not saying Russia, Ukraine, and America are just all equally bad actors. Okay. It is clear that Russia is the worst actor. Okay. In terms of they're the ones who have actively invaded a country.
Yes.
But the motivations of America at play here have not been noble. They have absolutely been toying with this region for a long time. And it's because they've been trying to weaken Russia, not out of some like idea of altruism and trying to expand freedom to the Russian people, but to increase American hegemony. And I think that America is more interested in increasing their dominance on the world stage than they are in freedom. And so, again, going back to the Star Wars analogy, we have to be wary of America going out there and fighting wars in the name of protecting people and fighting the bad guys, because, you know, we got demons in our closet too, just waiting to get out. And I think part of what there have been instances in the past where the outcry from the American people has restrained that war machine back. And so to that extent, what you brought up earlier, Brian, I agree with you. But my point is that just ever increases the need, in my opinion, why we have to double and triple down on opposing all wars and all interventions. Because the minute we give the warmongers an inch, they take a mile. The minute we say, you know what, it's okay to put a little bit of support into this one spot of the region, suddenly we're engaged in World War III and millions are dead. And I 100,000,000% say that we have to avoid that. And that doesn't mean that we have perfect solutions ahead of us on the other side, but we have to explore them and we have to do our best at finding them.
How many nuclear weapons do I need to have to invade anyone I want? Just give me a number. 5, 10,
no, again,
20.
No, Brian, this is, that, again,
that's always been my question.
This is you doing the Kathy Newman thing. So what you're saying is,
it's 100%.
It's 100%.
Millions from dead, millions from dying. Fine. I've always asked this question. How many nuclear weapons do I need to have to invade anyone I want? Seriously, if your only fear is they have enough nuclear weapons to blow up everybody.
No. I'm not even saying the nuclear weapons. We could have no nuclear weapons deployed, have a 5 to 10 year war with, you know, escalation with Russia, and there would still be at least hundreds of thousands dead.
Okay, but that's what's going on right now in Ukraine. So, I mean, you know, hundreds of thousands. So, anyhow, Hody, I know we're way over time here, but I mean, just at the end of it, the thing is that we sit here and say we want to stop war, and I'm agreement in that, but everybody that comes to the table has to want to end the war themselves. And Hody, as you said, we give them lands, that really going to stop them? Probably not. We've played this history several times over and over again. It's a shitty situation. And it'd be lovely to go ahead and have the war end tomorrow. But the idea that the U.S. wants to go ahead and continue this war and start one in Taiwan is a little ludicrous overall. So
I find it somewhat believable, just because the U.S. has enjoyed proxy wars for a long time.
Enjoyed
promote their
wars,
countries.
But the thing is that the you know, the numbers trying to invade Taiwan, it's not Ukraine. It's not Normandy. Yeah, you're talking about 30,000 Chinese paratroopers dead before they get in sight of Taiwan, because it's 100 miles away.
Whether it's a proxy war or whether we put boots on the ground ourselves, it's kind of besides the point. It's still millions. It's still thousands dead if it's a short term conflict. And the longer it that pans out, and the more we enable those things to happen, the death toll just keeps on rising. So no, okay. I think we just have different perspectives on war. And I just think that you always immediately try to end the conflict as quickly as possible and look for peaceful solutions. I don't believe in using one bully to push back another bully. We've tried that. It doesn't work.
We've also gone ahead and let the bully kick the crap out of the kids in the schoolyard, and that doesn't work either. So,
but you know what we haven't tried? We haven't tried increasing freedom here at home and trying to expand that out.
I think that's the thing, is like a lot of this is, and I think that's where it comes to. This isn't going to look good, because here's the thing. Statists create problems that statists have to solve.
Right.
Right. Like, mm-hmm. And so this is their desire, is to like have this thing to just be like, oh, well, I created this problem. The only way I can undo this responsibly is with statism. You look at our pull out of Afghanistan, right? And I'm over here, anti-word of the court, get out of there, leave, run as fast as you can. And then it's like, okay, well, we screwed it up and we left a whole bunch of stuff back there, and we actually ended up, they fell into the hands of the enemy, and they now have them. And these people are really, really crappy about human rights and killing people.
Killing women, you know, closing schools, poisoning.
All that, jazz, right? They're terrible, right?
And not so, our problem.
Right. I mean,
it's not.
Right. But here's the thing. Now it is our problem. And as a libertarian, this is an infraction against one person's liberty. Liberty is an infraction against all our liberties.
Yep.
This is individualism, right? The collectivized might say, that's their problem. This is our problem. This is our problem. This is her problem, our problem. No, this is, any infractions against human beings should concern us. Yes. We should become involved. The difference is our kind of involvement is not with the state. And this is kind of the tricky
issue
that we're having.
It's not the American government's problem to go solve.
Yeah. Well, I know that's what you meant, but when it comes across that way, it's like, oh, it's not a problem, I don't care. Because a lot of people.
Right. But when you tell
them,
people,
liberty is leave me alone, leave them alone, leave her alone, leave them alone. And I just expect I'm going to do it. Everybody else is going to do it too, right? Well, no, that's not the way it works. And so that is why we have to form coalitions of individuals to come together to say, hey, an infraction against one individual is an attack on individualism for everyone. And so we need to do something about it. Now, we do need to be equally vocal. And this is why I kind of get caught in the middle so often on these kinds of things, is because on one hand, people are really good about not filling in the blanks, right? Because they'll just be like, one is just like, hey, I never said we needed to not get involved, or I never said we had to get involved. It's like, right, but when you spew nonstop Russian Today propaganda about the Azov Battalion, right, which they've been promoting since 2014. By the way, Azov Battalion fully captured. I don't know if some of you guys knew that. Like, that's actually
they were captured when Mariupol fell.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you knew that. I didn't know that. I had to find this out looking this up because people still call the Ukrainians Nazis, right? Yeah. Like, so when you spout off nothing but Russian Today stuff and just be like, well, I never said we needed to get involved. Okay. But then here's the other side of that coin, right? Is we got the government and the CIA absolutely has talking points. And the FBI, absolutely. We know the FBI, I mean, heck, they got involved for weird Facebook stuff, right?
Yeah.
They're in like private DMs with like Mark Zuckerberg and all that like weird, like Jack Dorsey and stuff. And they're making deals and everything like that. What do we want? We want you to promote this. We don't want you to promote this. We want you to promote this escalation. We don't want you to talk about this very much. So
Let me just say this. Have I brought up Nazis once during this episode?
No.
My point just being, when Brian, this is why you're doing a Kathy Newman, when you instantly turn it around to, oh, well, I guess Russia can do whatever it wants, as if that's my position, that's just disingenuous.
It's not, like, well, the thing is this, hang on here. A criminal has broken into my house and my daughter is in there. He's been known to rape and torture women. And it goes into my neighbor's house and does that. What's going to happen in there, do you think? I see him break in. I hear the girl screaming. Not my problem?
He's strapped.
Exactly. It's what we're trying to do for Ukraine. Thanks for joining our side.
I'm saying the American government should not be involved in doing that, and they shouldn't have acted in ways to get the. I mean, the problem is the situation's not analogous. You're comparing a house
America's
and someone breaking in to this giant clusterfuck of different nations and governments involved and treaties that were broken. And I mean, it's just it's not an analogous situation. Other than people doing violence against other people is bad. But how we stop that, I mean, you can just say it's bad and we need to stop them. But then what you're doing too is providing cover to the war hawks who want to go over there and push back Russia. And that is advocating for war, and that is advocating for an increase in government. And that is not what libertarians do.
Okay, cool. I'm not a libertarian. Awesome.
But
now,
but like, I mean, honestly, your position, Jacob, if he just makes the same thing, that's like, it's not anti-war to just say, let it end and let them continue to do war. That's not really anti-war.
That's it. Yeah,
everybody can throw this accusation around.
My position is you need to, like, America should be calling people to the table to negotiate a peace. And
we know they'll continue to invade.
Because you
got to do something. This is their Nirvana fallacy. Like, there is no perfect way out. But stopping the war now versus letting it go on for another 5 years.
I'm going to do a Jacob here. You need to have a high time preference on this one, Jacob. Okay, because your time preference short term, stop the invasion now. That's all well and good. But,
no, I don't play time preference with people's lives, Cody. We need to sacrifice 5,000 lives now to try to do something with Russia and save a tiny sliver of land. Like, that's not about time preference. That's saying we don't play with people's lives. We don't get to sit here and play gods and go, no, we have to sacrifice another year of war and this many more thousands of people's lives in order to prevent Russia from getting this sliver of land. No, stop the war now.
Okay, and can I just point out that Dmitry Peskov, who is Putin's spokesman, says there is no prospect for diplomatic means of selling the solution around the Ukraine.
Sure. They're going to take it all eventually. They're going to throw bodies at it until they do. Like, this
is what Russia does in all of history.
Right. This is what they always have done. And they've ignored every peace treaty they've made with Chechnya and Dagestan and Belarus. They don't care, right? They're going to invade whatever and do whatever. We can't really control that. My issue is just when these accusations of anti-war go back and forth. Look, on the bottom line, we here in this group are all anti-war. There are a lot of hail Putin, nut jobs that are pro-war, you know? And then there are a lot of, let's be honest, government manufacturing firms that would love to see things continue to escalate in Ukraine for as long as it can, slowly surely.
We're going to need 5 years of weapons production and bullets and artillery alone to get back up to our stockpile. Trust me, Raytheon's loving this.
I'm
not disputing that one. Bit.
Well, and I think a lot of this is disputed. What we're having a different opinions on what to do to end the war. And I think we will have to end this just because we're not coming to the same conclusion. Yeah. One is end it now and then they'll keep fighting. And then the other one is keep getting involved and America is going to America.
Well, no, but I think my position is also yours, Hody, which is we don't have to, it's not do nothing. It's stop the war and keep on as libertarians expanding freedom. And is that an instant fix? No, but that's the only long-term solution.
Okay, and as long as you're good with another 200,000 Ukrainians dead by doing that, that's fine. If you're good, because that's what's going to happen here. I just want you to understand that.
I don't agree with that assertion. But even if that was going to happen, it's not like if this war goes on for 4 or 5 years, you're not going to have just as many, if not probably double that amount dead. So I mean, it's my point just being that. Yeah, I'm sorry. My anti-war position, I'm not trying to be insulting, but just my anti-war position is just to stop the war, to be anti-war, not to escalate war to end war. Like, I don't think you escalate to de-escalate. I don't believe in escalation to de-escalate on a global stage with millions of lives at stake.
But it's, you know, I think to Brian's point, I think the reason it is, and it is offensive that you would call him pro-war, is because his solution looks different than yours. Because frankly, he could very easily flip this around on you, Jacob, and just say, oh, yeah, you say you're anti-war when you're just allowing some warmonger to invade whatever country he wants because he's got one nuclear bomb and he can just keep doing it. And you'll make him sign a piece of paper and then he'll keep doing it. But you're anti-war because you're not fighting. You're just letting him kill people, but you're not killing people. So you're anti-war. This is the thing. It's offensive. We are all anti-war here. We are not trying, like, this picking at each other thing. For me, this is statism. It's a statist problem. And so for statists love to set themselves up as the only answer to it, right? This is why we have these conversations and why I'm trying to wrap this up here on something we can agree on. Because what it comes down to is we do need to have markets fix this. We also need to have compassion on each other to fix this. Yes. We need to have a lot of love in our hearts for our Ukrainian brothers and sisters. We need to have a lot of love in our hearts for American brothers and sisters, right? And people who are out there dying and being killed and understanding that this is a terrible thing and that it's not acceptable. Even one death is not acceptable, right? When we negotiate, we're using the tools of state, right? So therefore, we are not going to come into a position where there is no deaths or no, there's never a utopia, right? This is statism. This is the point of statism, right? We are debating on this show right now, statist solutions. Now, we may disagree, and I know we disagree on which ones are more realistic. That's fine. But the issue is that it is all bad because it is a statist problem. And therefore, we are trying to formulate statist solutions. So my hope to the audience, to everybody listening here, is I hope you've learned a lot. I know I have, about the kind of what do we do in Ukraine, right? Now, honestly, I feel if you have a really strong opinion one way or another, you probably need to learn a little bit more, right? Like, this is complicated. It's not ungraspable, like I said at the beginning, but it is complicated, you know? And it's important that we kind of understand that, not pick at each other, but do push for a solution. It just has to be a non-government solution. And I think right now it's going to be a government solution. Either Brian or Jacob's going to have their way. There's nothing else to it. Right?
I would love to see a private solution come into this. I really would. I just think that from a logistical standpoint, I mean, it's almost impossible. It's like trying to hire a UPS to go ahead and deliver food. In a few years, they'll get it. But you know,
and it's one of those things that, like, the one of the things that the market is great about is prevention. It's not really great at status cures, right? Like, because what we look at now is we just say, oh, the legal system is corrupt. Okay, just let every prisoner out. It's like, oh, all right. Yep. Well, we've created a status problem. We're going to have to deal with some statist solutions. Now, we can debate on the efficacy of those and which one more advances freedom. That I totally understand. But the important thing is that we are all freedom lovers here. We do need to understand that freedom needs to play a part of this, and our philosophy needs to play a part of this, especially our philosophy of individualism and our love of people and their right to self-defense, their right to identify, the right to live where they want to live.
Yep.
Right. This is definitely, this can become, we talked about the suckage on borders a lot here, right? The ludicrousness of countries to say that they own a piece of land is in the electronic age. I hope it's something that in like a thousand years when we're fully in the electronic era that people are like, why did they do that? Like, it's just a goofball thing, you know?
I think actually a great thing to have done with all of this would have been to go to both Russia and Ukraine and say, bring your smart, anyone who's got a brain wants to get out. Come here. Come on. You get a, it's like what we used to do with Cuba. You get a green card. Come on in.
Yes.
Become part of this country. And watch what the circuit, the drain that, you know, that is Ukraine and Russia, who are already in a population death spiral. When you see that going on, that would have been a great solution. And it's already happening. I mean, a lot, anyone who's smart enough and young enough in Russia got the hell out. And of course, everybody tried to leave Ukraine when they had to. So, but anyhow, Hody, it's been, I know it's been a little interesting tonight. So
that's all right. We knew we were going to disagree on this one, and that's fine. No,
I respect you, and I respect some of Jacob's positions, but I think it's just I have a hard time sitting there and saying, you know what, just we're going to stop doing this, and we're going to stop supporting them, and that'll end. They'll come to the peace table because,
right. I don't think there's a clear-cut solution. It's very difficult when we talk about it, because I think on one hand, like, a lot of the pro-war people have Jacob's position.
Yeah, they
and then a lot of manufacturers and feds have your position, and it's like that's these are both groups that are really bloodthirsty and really do not have your best interests. And like, it is, unfortunately, you and Jacob and myself are all ethical people. Mm-hmm. And so unfortunately, we're like, what we're doing is we're taking these like monstrous animals and being like, how do we arrange them so that peace happens? And it's like, it's going to be a disaster. They're monsters. They're like, all these things are like ravenous, bloodthirsty beasts. Yeah. So like, we try to talk about what can like, calm them down, but ultimately this shouldn't be an issue we're dealing with, because you know, I mean, if libertarians, and again, this is what I really would like to end on for everybody to understand, if libertarianism ruled more in the world like 100 years ago, this war would not be happening.
Agreed.
And so the best thing you can do now is not what we do in Ukraine now, because it's ugly no matter what, but what you do going forward, right? Promote immigration, promote business, promote self-defense. Oh my goodness. Individual self-defense for other countries would have been huge for this situation, right?
Oh yeah.
Promoting so many libertarian ideas and individualist ideas would have simplified this so much, to the point where it's like, yeah, maybe they hate us. What are they going to do about it? Like, and so this is something to think about going forward, because what we do going forward is going to be a mess in Ukraine.
Yep.
But what we do in other countries and in our own personal lives and the values that we promote, there's the Syria bill going on, I believe tomorrow, right? Like, all this is, you're seeing it unfold right now, and you may not deal with it. Like, 100 years ago, did we know this war was going to happen? No.
Man,
but these kind of things happen. But these kind of things happen, right? We can predict this kind of thing. So if we continue to predict closed markets, sanctions, hardline immigration, lack of ability to have self-defense, cronyism within our own government, an economic system that relies on spending and war. Right. If we continue to have all these things, you can reasonably assume this isn't going to be the last time this happens, right? So, you know, that kind of thing is just going to happen. Everybody, thank you so much. I know we kind of had a longer episode today. I really appreciate Brian. Thank you so much for your time. Jacob had to take off, but Jacob, thank you for your time as well, if you are still listening. I really appreciate it. To those who say we never discuss good things, we just talked about the Jesus ad on our last show. Yes. Please go see that. It was a really great one. We'll continue to have some good stuff coming up. We look forward to talking to you all later. Toodaloo, everybody.